It's on.
Everybody, come and grab a seat. I'm just about to start the meeting. Well, welcome everyone. My name's Angie and I'm an alcoholic. So we're almost at the end of our convention. It's going to be a bit sad, but the topic for this meeting is the joy of living. I think you all know by now where the toilets and the smoking area and the tea and coffee is. I'm going to now read the preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organisation or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. I'll now hand it over to Megs.
Good morning, my name's Megs and I'm an alcoholic. The 12 traditions. 1. Our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon AA unity. 2. For our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants, they do not govern. 3. The only requirement for AA membership is a desire to stop drinking. 4. Each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or AA as a whole. 5. Each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the alcoholic who still suffers. 6. An AA group ought never endorse, finance or lend the AA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7. Every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8. Alcoholics Anonymous should refrain forever non-professional, but our service centres may employ special workers. 9. AA as such ought never be organised, but we may create service boards or community committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10. Alcoholics Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the AA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 10. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio and films. Anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principle before personalities. Thank you.
The format of this meeting is that we have two guest speakers sharing for 10 minutes each. We'll then be selecting people from the room to share for 5 minutes each, concluding the meeting with a final 10-minute guest speaker. Speakers will get a one-minute wrap-up card and a finish card. If you have already been asked to share at this convention, please decline to give others a chance. The topic for this meeting is the joy of living. The reading comes from the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. On page 15, we commence to make many fast friends, and a fellowship has grown up among us, of which it is a wonderful thing to feel a part. The joy of living we really have, even under pressure and difficulty. And on page 16, There is, however, a vast amount of fun about it all. I suppose some would be shocked at our seeming worldliness and levity, but just underneath there is deadly earnestness. Faith has to work 24 hours a day in and through us, or we perish. Most of us feel we need look no further for utopia. We have it with us right here and now. Each day, my friend's simple talk in our kitchen multiplies itself in a widening circle of peace on earth and goodwill to men. And on page 132, but we aren't a glum lot. If newcomers could see no joy or fun in our existence, they wouldn't want it. We absolutely insist on enjoying life. So I'll now ask our first guest speaker, Susie H. from New South Wales, to come up and share.
Thanks. Hi everybody, good morning. I'm Susie, I'm an alcoholic. And the joy of living, I think we've heard it all yesterday and today, haven't we? I've just had the kids laughing. I'm sitting in meetings, people laughing, and I'm sure you all had a great time at the dance last night as well. I was somebody who, I just couldn't imagine my life without alcohol. I just couldn't imagine how you could possibly have any kind of joy or fun or, laughter or anything without alcohol. I just thought, basically, that alcohol equaled fun, creativity, joy, romance, all of that. That's what I thought that it equaled. And of course, I guess at some point, sometimes there was a lot of fun and laughter, but, underneath it all, there was this awful, really awful sense of anxiety and fear of what everybody thought and what they didn't think. And then, of course, as it went on, is there going to be enough? Is there going to be enough to go around? And have I got enough? And then it was, how can I get more without anybody noticing that I'm getting more? How can I keep myself all together coordinated without my husband or my children seeing that I'm absolutely completely out of it? My husband used to come home from work, and because I used to do the whole, changing the bottles around in the fridge, so it looked like I'd only had one glass. And he'd say to me, "Darling, I just can't understand how you can be so drunk after just one glass." And of course, I'd already had, at least a bottle before, So all that, dishonesty and deceit and the anxiety and the fear and the trepidation, it was just, for me, it became an absolute living nightmare. And it was really, the four horsemen that it talks about in the big book, that was me, Sort of 3 o'clock in the morning, the sheets were damp with perspiration, the anxiety, how was I going to manage my day? I was an academic at a university, and I used to have to give lectures to, 300 or 400 people on a stage like this. And, I had the DTs big time, the alcohol was just pouring out of me. And anyway, to cut a long story short, I was somebody who, I just couldn't give up alcohol, I can say that to you, and I know that you understand what I'm talking about, I was drinking against my own will, but really, my motto was, I can see that I need to give up alcohol, but I just don't want to at the minute, and when I do, I'll let you know, and then I'll do it. That's how I really thought that I had some kind of control over it, that I would be able to make that decision when I gave up and when I didn't give up, So it was actually quite a terrifying moment when I realised that actually I couldn't give it up at all. And I actually, by that time, I was physically addicted to it, so I actually did need it just to stop the shaking and the horrors and all the rest of it. So, I became a homeless person in Sydney, and, I was just saying to my beautiful, loving fiancé this morning, as we were walking in the sunshine, full of the joy, of being in love and just being at a beautiful AA meeting and just being able to get up in the morning and not have to go out looking for alcohol, And in my case, I would be crawling out of the bushes, out of a park with my hair in a haystack, with all my clothes disheveled, if I still had any clothes, trying to find enough money. and trying to find somebody that would sell me alcohol. So that's where this disease took me. And in that reading, it said something about the deadly earnestness of the disease of alcoholism, and it really is, it's a killer, isn't it? It is a killer. You know, for me, by the time I was dying, and I really mean that in all sincerity, I was dying, I didn't really have long to live, and I had that pure, it's a pure gold moment, isn't it, when you have that real, you know, honest, heartfelt surrender to a higher power. And that's what I had. And I made a commitment that I was going to do it all. Just going to do the whole thing. Whatever was suggested, I was going to do it all. I would do anything, anything to stop this obsession in my head and the soul sickness, you know, the emptiness in my soul and my spirit. And I knew, you know, that I had this little ember, you know, in my soul that still wanted to live. I still had that. It was just like a little fire, you know, the little embers in the fire. It was like just like that. And I knew that I really did want to live, and I wanted to see what was around the corner. And that has been my journey, you know, and that's 9.5 years, and I haven't had a drink since that moment, which I just find absolutely extraordinary, you know, because I was somebody who I couldn't stop thinking about it, and I couldn't stop drinking it. So to me, you know, the joy of living, you know, really is, you know, I understood really very early on that the answer was in the steps. And so I knew that I needed to find somebody who could make sense of these steps to me. You know, what does it mean? What does all this mean, you know? So what does it mean to be powerless? What does it mean to be unmanageable? What does it mean come to believe? You know, it was just all a complete mystery to me. And of course, at that point, I couldn't read. I couldn't really. I'd have to sit by the door because I was so traumatized, and I couldn't. Half the time, I didn't really know who I was, you know. So I had some beautiful women at a Friday night women's meeting in Sydney, and they just surrounded me, you know, and just protected me. I realized actually that I needed almost like a 24-hour security around my sobriety. And I often used to talk about my sobriety as this beautiful diamond, you know, in a black velvet box that needed full, you know, scales security, because my mind would take me to the bottle shop at a drop of a hat. You know, I had to make myself responsible. So the joy of living has really been shown to me by other people in AA, you know. Many, many people actually have shared with me their experience, strength and hope. And I really gained the most, I suppose, from doing the steps, from applying the spiritual principles in my life. I think it's absolutely beautiful, you know, that I can start my day on my knees, asking God to direct my thinking, show me what I'm supposed to be doing today, give me the courage to do that. Take away whatever's in the way, whatever defects in the way, just take it away so that I've got that real plugged in sense, you know, to that spiritual energy flow. And it's beautiful because I can just go through my day, I can go to work, I can act with integrity, I can speak up when I need to speak up, although that's one of those ones, you know, that I need a lot of practice on. But I'm getting there, you know, I'm practicing that. I can see what my defects of character are, you know, which will always drive me back to getting a drink. So I can really see those things. And I guess, you know, it's a beautiful thing to be actually, you know, fully connected to a spiritual power, you know, that's actually guiding my life and showing me what I'm supposed to be doing. I don't need to work it all out at all. My idea in the past was that I just needed to work harder, you know, I just need to work harder, push through, and then I'll be, you know, then I'll deserve, you know, at least one bottle of wine, maybe more, you know. That was my idea. But my idea today is, you know, I just love coming to these kind of rallies, and thank you for the committee for putting it on. I think you've done an amazing job. I love being in a room full of alcoholics who really get what I'm saying, who understand what I'm talking about. And yeah, I love being in AA, you know, I really do. It's the core of my life. And the program of AA, the 12 steps of AA, they have really given me the recipe, you know, the instructions, the directions of how to live my life, you know, true to myself. And using the skills and talents that God has given me, you know, to the best of my ability. you know, and that's, you know, what more can you ask for, really, you know? So thank you. So much.
Okay, I'm just going to call upon Tonti.
Thanks for that, my home group's Green Slopes, and this is a wonderful convention. I just really am amazed how professional and how attractive that the committee's made the whole convention, just in terms of like the emails coming out, and that the fact that the thing that Ange read, which I've got a copy in here, that I was going to sort of, you know, read from as well, but Andrew already read them out. Just really beautifully fitted in with the whole big book. It's just really great. I think you've done a fantastic job. Give yourself a clap. You know, in the tradition it says attraction rather than promotion. Well, you hit that one right on, you nailed that one. It's really attractive. So the joy of living, you know, like those points that were pointed out. I suppose before I got sober, I had moments of joy of living, but nowhere near to the degree that I've had since I got sober. I got sober in 98 and, you know, I couldn't work out whether I was an alcoholic or not, but I went on a journey to find out. I knew I was addicted to marijuana, but I wasn't sure about alcohol, so I gave that up to marijuana, and then I kept drinking. And then I saw the, what do they call, the Whitlams down at the Alexandra Hills Hotel one night. And I got in the car, and my mate said, oh, we'll have a joint. And I said, hurry up, because I've got to get out in the next three suburbs. I got out of the car and walked across the bonnet, as you do, and went and sat on the bed and went, oh God, I'm stoned again. And I swore off this, I was going to be so... So I looked into whether I was an alcoholic or not. And I went on a journey and prayed, and I ended up in Armidale and found out a bloke walked up to me and said, I can't tell you whether you're an alcoholic or not, but I can help you find out. And he took me through the big book and took me through the steps. Without that, I would have been trying to cure my sick mind with my sick mind, and it doesn't work. You know, I got to quit playing God, as it says. It's all in this book. And last night, I couldn't be here last night. I was at my niece's 21st, and I was sober, and it was great. All my family was there, and you know, it was just good to be there. And I was seeing my niece, who drinks a lot. You know, I don't want to judge or anything, but I've got to keep a chair, maybe, for her in the next couple of decades, maybe. But, you know, it was just good to be there. And that's part of the joy of living, is getting to these things, being able to be part of my family, be part of celebrations, remember them. Remember that they're coming up, and remember them the next day after being there, you know, not in a blackout. And There's many things I wanted to touch on. When I got home last night, I started to look, you know, at this topic and go through the book in the bits that the committee's put out, and I found some other pieces about the joy of living. You know, I looked long and hard at that bit where it says, and I'll find it now because I wrote it down. Why don't I just read it rather than stumble through it? I think it's in 107. Oh. There's too many things in this big book. Oops. It's the part that goes on about bills for squarely met, you know, responsibilities met, and all that kind of thing. But I will find it, so bear with me. Thank you. it's always rung very true for me, as if I could live my life that way, I probably would have peace in my head. And that's what I was after. Just a quiet head. Because sometimes I didn't relate to being an alcoholic. I didn't drink in the morning, I didn't drink at work. But I related to the thinking. And I went to the Cooperoo meeting, I don't know when, about 3 years into sobriety, 4 years into sobriety. Still sometimes questioning whether I was an alcoholic. So still not fully grasping the joy of living. And a bloke, his name is Tom, he's passed away now. I swear he was about 7 feet tall that day. It's a disease of perception, you know, and you can have the disease of perception in sobriety. And I swore he was stood on a stage. But those of you who've been to that meeting in Jellicoe Street know there's no stage there. And he looked up, he had a beautiful smile. He was an Irish guy, and he said, you know, I came to AA because I wanted peace in my head. And I went, oh God, I'm in the right place. Because that's, as it says in here, thinking is my problem. You know, drinking and all those things are symptoms of the disease. Thinking is the problem. And the joy of living today allows me, when my thinking becomes distorted, that I'm aware of it. Before, the abnormal was normal. I didn't know that my thinking was stinking. I didn't know I had that problem. And today I'm aware of it. And there's those three A's. I know we're in AA there, the two A's. The three A's are awareness, acceptance and action. When I can be aware that I'm going off, I can then accept it and then pray for guidance about what action I should take to change that way of being. And then I have peace, and then I have a joy of living. And you know, the joy of living that I found many times in doing service, in you know, being on committees and going to conventions and you know, can also be contrasted with being on those committees, because sometimes it can be tough because we're full of personalities. People used to share that the only problem with Alcoholics Anonymous is that it's full of bloody alcoholics. And that's true, but we're not a glum lot, you know. We know how to party, going to conventions in Canberra and that, the band, I remember being to a few conventions and the band used to say, you guys just don't want to go home. Normally we play and people don't get up to dance till about halfway through, you know, but you guys, everyone gets up straight away and just dances their legs off. We're a fantastic lot of people, and this program, I believe, has given me and gives us the joy of living, the ability to get in touch with who we really are. I always thought, you know, better than and less than, that was my thinking. I ended up under tables because I was drunk, or standing on them, dancing, falling off with bleeding legs, or standing on them and pontificating and thinking I knew everything. And now I can sit at a table. Now I can be equal to all in my thinking. And of course I'm human, I err, I do judge, but as I said, I can see that thinking isn't the best. And then I ask to be guided to how I can be useful, you know. And I'm going to find this passage before I finish, though. Because, you know, as my friend Noel, who's not well at the moment, and I pray for him and I ask you to do that, he quotes Bill, you know, one more power drive, that'll fix it, you know. It's me playing God again and wanting to think, oh, well, I can do this, I can fix this, you know. I'm probably doing this by trying to find this passage, and if I don't find it, well, so be it. I was going through last night, you know, the different parts. I know where it is. See, it's not in the bloody big book, in the 12b12. And I was just seeing so much. In step 12, the beginning of step 12, the first three words are, four words are, the joy of living is the theme of AA's 12th step, and action is the key word, you know? And this part here, still more wonderful is the feeling that we do not have to Be especially distinguished among our fellows in order to be useful or profoundly happy. Profoundly happy, pretty close to the joy of living. Not many of us can be leaders of prominence, nor do we wish to be. Service, gladly rendered. Obligations, squarely met. Troubles, well accepted or solved with God's help. The knowledge that at home or in the world outside, we are partners in a common effort. The well-understood fact that in God's sight, all human beings are important. The proof that love freely given surely brings a full return. The certainty that we are no longer isolated and alone in the self-constructed prisons. I heard that shared next door and I related to it. Isolation gives us a self-constructed prison. And the surety that we need no longer be square pegs in round holes, but can fit and belong in God's scheme of things. These are the permanent and legitimate satisfactions of right living, for which no amount of pomp and circumstance, no heap of material possessions could possibly be substitute. True ambition is not what we thought it was. True ambition is the deep desire to live usefully and walk humbly under the grace of God. For me, that's the joy of living. And the joy of living is that I can wrap this up now. And let you all enjoy the rest of the convention a day at a time. Thank you.
Speaking of a great committee, I'd like to ask the lady who's been working tirelessly at the registration desk, Martina, would you like to come up and share?
It's been a team effort. My name is Martina and I'm an alcoholic. I'll give that back to you already. The joy of living. My sobriety date is the 1st of November, 1994, and I got sober 8 days after my 21st birthday, and I've been blessed to get sober in and around young people's conventions and AA in the States. And so, when I came here and, many years ago, I've been here almost 9 years now, and I saw that there was, this growing young people's community and fellowship and a convention, here in Queensland, I was really excited and I want to get involved. And, and I spoke at a few different conventions, and then my joy of living started to happen for me, my family started happening. I, had a few children and I wanted to get involved, but I couldn't. It was just, there was too much happening in my life and I was torn. I was really extremely torn. And as much as I wanted to be a part of, the committees that were happening each year to put on the annual Young People's, the QEPAW that happens every year in Queensland, I couldn't. I just had too many other personal commitments. And then a few God shots happened. Angie came down to the Byron Convention. She grabbed a sponsee of mine, grabbed her to come to the convention. That sponsee grabbed me to come to a committee meeting. And, the three of us converged at a committee meeting. And, I got lit right back up because this is, these conventions, and I'm going to cry. Don't. Look at the light. Planning conventions like this and being a part of this type of stuff is where my joy of living comes. Being able to know where I can be a part of and bridge that gap of, the demographics of, I don't want to call it big people AA, because I'm big people, you know, and young people AA, you know, so where we can grab the young people coming in the door, so like we can raise the bottom of, you know, people going out there and you know, having to stay too long, you know, scraping their faces on their bottoms, that they can come in and get sober and know that there's, you know, a fellowship and there's recovery and that they can stay sober and they can come to conventions and get the message. And we can bridge that demographics here in amazing Aussie PAW conventions, you know, in a room full of people. That's just, you know, putting on these conventions is where my joy of living comes. And I'm so glad that I was able to come onto this convention and, you know, toil away, you know, coming up from the Gold Coast to, you know, Brisbane monthly, you know, meetings and, you know, putting in our 2 cents and doing the stuff and coming together as a committee and putting on this amazing convention, because I've loved putting on conventions and watching people, the message being carried to newcomers and the message being carried to old timers and the message being carried to people, you know, who have been here a long time, who are still suffering in the rooms, who can just kind of just scrape to a convention or whatever. And I'm so glad that you guys are all here to be a part of what I consider to be my joy of living. You know, I got sober in Alcoholics Anonymous, and everything to me today I know is a direct result of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'm not talking about the outside stuff. I'm talking about the fact that what I used to be was a gun-toting, psychopath, drug-dealing nutbag from Los Angeles with no self-esteem, couldn't take my eyes off the ground, visual and auditory hallucinations. The left side of my face was paralyzed from, you know, an alcohol-induced car accident. I was not a vision for you, you know? You know, today, I'm 21 years sober, you know, I have a love and joy and care for you. You know, I have relationships with my family. I know how to be a mother, a daughter, a sister, a wife, a business owner, you know, one amongst a committee, you know, I know how to, you know, to be, you know, one of, as opposed to either, you know, being as low as the belly of a snake or, you know, this inferiority, you know, complex. You know, I know how to, you know, stick my hand out and greet people, you know, when I couldn't look people in the eyes before that. You know, I've got this sense of self-esteem and joy in my life, and that's all a direct result of Alcoholics Anonymous and the steps and the traditions and the concepts of world service and learning how to do that all in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. So I thank you all. I thank you all for coming and being a part of this, and I love you and continue to be a part of this, and thanks.
Going to call upon Michael.
Hello everyone, my name's Michael, I'm an alcoholic. It's great to be, it's been a great weekend. I'm from up the sunny coast. I'm very young in this sobriety, which is getting on towards a year, but the joy of life I've found, I've been looking for joy in life for 35 years, and yeah, I'd get a couple of seconds a day maybe, or a few minutes or a week, and what I've found here is the joy of life is 24/7, and it wasn't that hard to get. I just was never given a key to that door. So I spent years looking. Now, I had a business, I had a family, I had a wife, I had everything. I had the big boat, no joy in life. Quickly turn that around and take away all those things, no money, no boat, no wife, not even sure if I've got somewhere to live. Immense joy. I wake up and I'm smiling. You know, I woke up this morning, got to bed about 1 or 2. Air bed had a hole in it. Not great. Woke up smiling. Couple of Panadol. I'm still happy, you know, because I'm not dry reaching. I'm not, you know, head pounding looking for water. And I went, I'm coming to a place where I look around and I see people I don't know, but I feel like I'm at home for the first time since I joined an exclusive club, and we all paid the highest price to get into this, and it was expensive. And being here is just a wonderful joy, because it's a joy of life that you can't get anywhere else when you're an alcoholic. And I'm just so grateful to be here and have that key. And my goal in life now is to actually one day give that key to someone else so they can hopefully get it way before I did, you know, which I stand here and I might look like I'm 50, but I'm actually only about 25 because I'm young, because I only got sobriety less than a year ago. Thanks, everyone.
Chrissy, are you? Yeah, thanks, mate. Would you like to share?
Hi friends, I'm Chrissy Alcoholic, and fantastic meeting. It's really hard, you've got next door, you know, working with others, which is a great topic, and then you've got the joy of living in here, so you've got two great meetings happening at the same time. My heart's pounding, it always does. I've been sober for 23 years, and I got sober when I was 21, so, and you know, I'm still alive, and that's good, and and it's really beautiful when you have an Aussie power. I've been to a few. When I first got sober, I went to a great convention, my very first convention, and it was the Yui Par. And I remember reading on the front, you know, about that. I love it. I love your flyers. Have been fantastic. Everybody's welcome. Every meeting, we read them out. We read flyers, and that's really important that you read all that stuff out at every meeting you go to. And everyone would say, oh, no, it's young. I said, no. It's been put on by young people for everyone, you know. And it was lovely that our last speaker spoke about his your first year in sobriety. And I've been really lucky enough in Alcoholics Anonymous. When I first came in here, there wasn't many people my age. And there was three of us around the same age as me. And lovely when I first met Martina, because I knew she was from overseas, and she came in the same time as me. But I was on the Gold Coast. There was a lot of twin set and pearls, and it was a bit different than me. And I came in, I loved The Cure, and I had these jeans that were ripped, and I had, I was a little bit different from everybody else, and I was young, and everything that came out of my mouth sounded like fire truck, you know, and it was, and these beautiful women in Alcoholics Anonymous with their twin set and pearls will come up and just love me. And they would just say, keep coming back, Chrissy, and it'll be all right, and you don't need to speak like you're in the pub anymore. And it's like, you know, and part of me just wanted to do this, but the other part of me wanted to just be nurtured and loved by these beautiful women in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I heard once in Alcoholics Anonymous that men will pat your ass and women will save your ass. That is so true for me, and because I was a person that never hung around women, hated women with a passion, and I hated men, so I was really lonely in Alcoholics Anonymous for a very long time, and because I was full of fear as a woman, and I don't know if you relate to this, I never wore makeup, lipstick, Levi's jeans were my, you know, staple for everything. I had every pair of Doc Marten, you name it, but I just had so much fear. If I meet a woman, you know, a friend in AA, they won't like me, so I broke up, you know. So I just had a lot of fear, is what I'm saying. It took me about 2 years before I made a woman friend in Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, have a coffee. And I had I was like cheating. I used to write on my hand, what do you do for a living? Like, you know, I had no idea how to have a conversation with a person or anything. Going up the track, I'm 23 years sober. I went on and studied in sobriety. I brought my sponsor to my first class. She came and sat with me because I was terrified. I was like 24 and my sponsor comes to my class with me, and I was sitting there, and then Katie says, you know, can I go now? Like, you know, after it was like, I said, yeah, you can go, Kate. And I was like, you know, I was the kid that kicked out of school, was in trouble all the time, you know, locked up from my great disorder. It's interesting, we're in Beenleigh. This is where I grew up. I went to school here in Beenleigh. I got locked up here in Beenleigh. I'm a show kid, so I used to live at the Beenleigh showgrounds. So it's really funny coming here. I still feel a lot of fear and anxiety, but the good thing is that I'm here sober today. So down the track, got a beautiful husband. I've got a beautiful daughter who's 21, never seen me drink. I now wear pearls. I work in a library, which is quite interesting. You know, I'm the twin set and pearl type of person. I work in a library. I don't drink. I don't smoke. I love floristry and I box. So there you go. So I'm all rounder. And I've still got the same sponsor that I had when I first came in, and she still loved me, and I'm just really grateful to be here. You've done a wonderful job. I would have been here yesterday, but unfortunately I have to work, because just because I'm sober, people don't give me money. I have to work. So love being here. Thanks for putting on this convention. It's great.
Just call upon Shane.
Come on, brother.
Wasn't going to share, though. There you go.
There you go, friends. My name's Shane. I'm an alcoholic. Yeah. Towards 11. What a bit of life today. After last night, I'm so bloody tired. Yeah. And I don't have a hangover. In the beauty, I remember what I did last night. There were times when I was never invited to pubs, never invited to parties. My family kicked me out because of my drinking, because I couldn't be trusted. Today's different. I got sober. Took a long time to get sober. I bummed around Brisbane for a while. I was like a ship without a rudder. I was going around the circles, getting nowhere. I was coming to AA, but I wasn't in AA. I was absorbing it, but I was just baking it. But today I realised this weekend's been an eye-opener for me. I haven't done no work in AA. I have listened to a lot of it. I can memorise a lot of things, but I haven't actually read the big book. But nobody actually take me through the big book, you know. And I'm originally from Sydney. Please don't hold that against me. And, it took me, I couldn't control my drinking. And it just became so much of a Groundhog Day. Every day I had to go and do the same thing. The rats would start Tuesday night, say before payday. They were gone Wednesday, I knew payday was around, drink was around. Out of the pub I was in. And that just went on and on for 20 odd years. In and out of AA. I went on long service leave for a while from AA. 10 years. Now, I've done my time, so. And I found a relationship and all that business in that time, and I did all the good things type of thing. But I only realised this a couple of weeks ago that I actually had a mistress with me as well. She was alcohol. She dominated my life completely. It took me to, I asked for a department housing house in Cowra. Got Corowa. Best mistake I ever made in my life. I got there now on my own, had nobody around me. And I was sitting in the pub trying to drink. One day it just did not work. I believe it was my higher power stepped in, because I've been around a lot longer. He said, time's up. He walked in and turned the light, switch off. The party's over now, Shane. Get your ass back to AA. I've done that ever since. Haven't had to pick up a drink for the last three and a half years. And I've never been that sober in my life. Today, shake a lot of leaf now, but today I'm so grateful that I come up this weekend. A friend of mine from Ipswich, he said he was going to come to this meet this weekend. I said, I'm going to come up. And I have so many things to be grateful with. A friend of mine gave me a plate to get up here. I've done that. I've got up here, I walked in the door and I've been so much welcomed and so much loved. And this is what AA is all about. Not being on your own, not being on an island. Come together with unity. And thank you for AA. Thank you for Bill and Bob. Thank you.
George, would you like to just come up and chat?
Hi, I'm George. I'm an alcoholic. This is my first convention, and yeah, I've had an awesome time. I can't believe how much fun I've had over this weekend. It's been amazing. And it was all due to pretty much these two people on the stage here. Got roped into helping out because it's all part of the service and you have to do your service work. So, yeah, put my hand up for waitressing, which turned into tea and coffee, which turned into something else, and now I'm up here nervous as hell. And last night I actually danced sober and yeah, couldn't believe it. I really didn't think that would ever happen. I was relaying a story about if my sister saw me up on the dance floor, she'd send me home from the pub because I'd definitely had enough. And last week was the birthday of my home group, Green Slopes. Getting involved there is, I have to meet and greet, which is a good one for me because, pretty much I like staying in the corner and that gets me out of meeting people and trying to remember people's names. And that was a fantastic night. I was high from a sober high, and I didn't realise that was possible. At the beginning I thought alcohol gave me confidence. It allowed me to talk to people, to come out of my shell. And in the end, it stripped me of all confidence. I wasn't able to do anything. I drank before work. I drank during lunch breaks. I wasn't able to talk to people. The joy of living for me is actually being part of this and, fully being a part of it and actually, having those sober highs that I didn't realise were possible. Thank you.
Just call upon Taylor from Victoria.
G'day guys, Taylor Alcoholic. I bought this for my sixth birthday June 8th, it's just gone. To come in the States and sell t-shirts and I love them. It's really good to be here. Obviously I'm from Melbourne, Victoria, and what a gift to be up here in another state. It's a lot warmer than Melbourne at the moment. I got sober at 20 years old and
You know, my drinking career was very short. My sponsor always says that, you know, I drank like a drag car, you know. It was all or nothing straight away. And that was, you know, just how life went when I found a drink. Before I drank, through schooling and high school and primary school, you know, I was socially awkward, didn't fit in, and just felt different, and had a really tough time getting along with life. I had all the isms before I drank. I was restless, irritable, discontent. In my own skin and couldn't control my emotions and just didn't know how to deal with life. And then when I found alcohol, that all changed, you know. I became this new person and I could go through my day and do life, you know. And very quickly for me it was, you know, get up and drink, go to work and drink, before school drink, you know. For my first drink, I knew I was an alcoholic. I got alcoholism in my family and I drank differently, you know. When I drank, I just had to have more, and I thought, shit, you know, I love it so much, and I was like, this is not good. You know, coming into Alcoholics Anonymous, I was done. I was really hopeless, and I couldn't do drinking anymore. It wasn't working for me. My days were a mess. My family didn't want to know me. I wasn't invited to Christmas. You know, I was this real black sheep. I had a great family, a good upbringing, but I just destroyed all of it. You know, I'd burnt all my bridges. My friends didn't want to know me. I had nowhere to live. You know, that was my existence. And, you know, I still drank. And I came home one day just begging for help, begging, you know, I need help. I need to get into a rehab. I need something. I just can't continue living this way. You know, I was just done. I was done. And I knew about AA and it had worked for my grandfather and other members of my family, but coming in, I was, not only was I, you know, hopeless, I thought I knew everything, but I was shit scared inside. I was really scared. I was a scared kid that I just didn't know if I could get sober and if it would work, and I thought, you know, I was different and, you know, I wouldn't get it. So luckily for me, you know, down in Melbourne, I found a group of guys that had stuff I wanted. You know, they were happy, they had a smile on their face, and I was anything but. Leaving my house without a drink was, you know, panic attack, get sick, pass out. I just couldn't do it. But these people had a smile on their face, they were happy to be there, and they were warm, welcoming, and loving to me. And I honestly just did what they did. Whatever they suggested I do, I did. You know, they picked me up, took me to meetings, they told me to, you know, clean up tea and coffee, whatever, I just did it. You know, I thought if it's work for them, if I just do what they say, you know, I'll get sober. And, you know, going through those steps on the wall, I got straight into it, you know. And I got a sponsor that was someone I knew and I really liked his story and I really identified with him. And I loved that he always said, like, you know, everything's a suggestion. You know, there's no, you know, he didn't tell him what to do, but he used to tell me, he's like, it's a suggestion when it comes out of my mouth, but it's a demand when it goes into your ears. You know, and I really liked that, you know, and I needed that. That was great for me. And I came from a very regimented home group and, you know, was very service-bound, and that's what I needed, you know. I didn't need the, you know, cuddling, it's okay, you know, you're all right. You know, I needed to be called on my bullshit and, you know, told, you know, the type of person I was, because that's just what I needed, you know. And my life today, it's just so far removed, you know, nothing to do externally, but the gift that, you know, I can get up here and talk to you guys and feel somewhat okay about, that's just a miracle. You know, I went from someone that couldn't leave my house and have a drink, you know, I was a shaking, shivering mess, to someone today that can, you know, get on a flight and go into state just at the whim, is great, you know. What a gift to be given, not just to not have that obsession and that desire to drink today. I get to have a real life, you know, real experiences, friends and family that want to talk to me, they want to see me, they ring me up and want to go for dinner. Like, it's not what I was used to at all. So I just thank you guys for this convention. It's been fantastic.
Linda, have you shared this weekend?
Yeah, of course.
The lady in the blue on the, would you like to share? Have you shared this weekend? Would you like to come up and share?
Mm-hmm.
really quite nervous. Hi, my name's Azura and I'm an alcoholic.
Azura.
I've been in and out of AA for years. Last had a drink 11 days ago. I've just moved into state. So I was very happy to find an AA group close to me. And the commonalities I find in these meetings, just the discomfort with myself and the awkwardness and the all these things that I hear other people say, and I relate so well to the stories that I hear. I just want to be a decent human being again. I did go for a time 2.5 years without drinking, and then a period of 4 months, 4.5 months, and this and that, but I spent quite a few years drinking. The effect that alcohol has on me turns me into a conceited, cocky sort of idiot with no real confidence, but this pseudo bravado face. But it's good to be sober today, and I think in AA before I didn't really take it seriously. I sort of skirted around the edge, and like somebody's already said, I went to AA but I wasn't in AA. But I'm really starting to listen and understand how it's very much a mental disease. Like, my thinking is just crazy. And somebody used the sentence, my own sick mind won't cure my own sick mind, and I just thought, oh, thank you for saying that, because it just resonates with me so much. I love to see and hear the grace, if you like to put it that way, of the old timers who have this, I don't know, this core of something that I want. Anyway, I'm extremely grateful to be here, so thank you.
I just want to ask the gentleman in the black glasses, top, would you like to share?
My name's Gordon, I'm an alcoholic and addict, and I've pretty much heard my story here today. I got sober when I was 18 years old, and now 45 this year. And I didn't get sober straight away. It took me 2 years to really accept that I was an alcoholic and that I couldn't drink with any safety. And, you know, it took that 2 years of coming to these rooms and listening to all of the differences. You know, and I did. I listened to everybody's differences, and I hadn't done this and I hadn't done that. And you know, there were so many differences. And, you know, it just took that time, you know, to really accept that I was an alcoholic. And you know, I don't really know exactly why I got sober young. You know, it's not really my doing. I believe that it's God who actually really got me sober, you know, because I really didn't want to get sober, you know. You know, I came into these rooms and I came in through Narcotics Anonymous originally because I knew I was a drug addict. I knew that I had a problem with, you know, shooting up speed and smoking dopes and popping pills and, you know, having, you know, alcoholic sessions and, you know, I was a mess, you know, and... you know, and I came into these rooms and I just, you know, came along really because, you know, NA people going to AA, and I'd come to AA at Stella Maris in Sydney, and I'd be there every day with my mates, and we'd all be chatting, you know, all young group of people, and we'd all hang out together, and we'd go out for coffee, and we'd go out to gay nightclubs up on Oxford Street till 3 in the morning, and we were partying, you know, but we were sober, you know. But for me, it just took that extra 2 years to really understand that I actually had a disease inside me, you know, and that it wasn't going away, you know, that alcoholism doesn't actually go away. And I remember, you know, I remember walking out of Stella Maris thinking I'm going to drink, and I walked out of the meeting, and that was an AA meeting, and I went up to the Oxford Hotel, and I remember after 22 months of being sober, just ordering a beer, and I ordered the beer, and I remember having the first sip of that beer, and something in my head just clicked, and I realised I was an alcoholic. And I knew from having that one sip of beer that the compulsion had already set in place, and I just couldn't put it down, you know. And, you know, I had many relapses. I tried to get sober again, and I ended up in hospital, and another suicide attempt, and, you know, I ended up in hospital, and it just took many relapses, you know. And, you know, I owe my life to Stella Maris in a lot of ways, because I went to that meeting after taking two other members out. We all decided we'd go out and drinking, and they were young as well, and we went out and we all had a relapse, and it was disastrous, you know. And I remember going to Stella Maris, and I really only wanted to go there just to tell everybody to go and get fucked, because I hated AA, you know? Because AA had actually destroyed my drinking, you know? And I was only young, and I thought, fuck, you know? And I went there, and I walked into the meeting, and I got halfway down, and I remember, and I mumbled, fuck off, you know? And I just sat down on the steps. There were like steps like this at the back of the meeting, and everybody still smoked in those days, and they were all crazy. And I just burst into tears. And something happened at that meeting, and I don't know what happened, but, you know, the reality is I walked out of that meeting, and, you know, I walked out. I remember ordering McDonald's. I was on the nod. I remember waking up in a hospital, you know, at RPA, which I'd been many times from suicide attempts, and, you know, and I just said that simple prayer, please help me, you know, and I don't know what happened, but the compulsion left me, you know. I didn't want to drink anymore, and I went to meetings, and to this day I still don't understand why God put people into my life who I needed, you know. I had a sponsor who is today still my sponsor 25 years later, and I love that man, you know, and, you know, he understood that I had chronic depression, and I suffered from, you know, chronic depression, where I actually had, you know, not only alcoholism but also depression. And I met a psychiatrist who was also the head of McKinnon Detox, and to me, it just seems to me that God put people into my lives who I needed at that time, you know, and it wasn't my doing, you know, it was God's plan for me to be sober today, you know, and to be free from this disease, you know, and I'll never really be fully free from this disease, because I'm the type of alcoholic who I believe I'll always have this disease, you know, and it's really dependent on me working the steps and putting the steps into my life, you know. If I don't come to these rooms, I go crazy. That's it, you know. If I stop praying, I go crazy. If I stop calling people and isolating, I go crazy. And, you know, so for me, it's a daily program. It's not just, you know, once in a while, you know, it's a daily program. And I forget I'm an alcoholic, and I can easily forget that this is a daily program, you know. you know, and somebody touched on, I'll only be 1 more second, but somebody touched on home, you know. Whenever I come to an AA meeting, I feel like I'm at home here. I feel at ease with myself, you know. That's the freedom of having these rooms, you people in my life, you know. I have freedom today, you know. I don't have that when I don't come here, you know. And I feel like I'm at home, you know. I don't know many of you people. I'm from Malaysia, you know, and that, you know, is another thing in my life, you know. I've been able to travel the world. So to get out of my flat, you know, at Liverpool, and to you know, not be able to actually get out of the flat and be in total isolation, to travelling the world and living in different countries, is truly amazing to me, you know. And this program has given me my life back, you know. And I really can't thank you people enough for, you know, being here and giving me my life back, you know. Thank you.
The lady in the front row, would you like to share?
Hi everyone, I'm German alcoholic. I do feel like home when I'm here and in part of the rooms. And it's a great feeling because for a long time I've always had a house, but I've never felt like I've had a home. And that just makes me emotional just thinking about it. I desperately didn't want to share today. And the reason why I didn't want to share is because I'm just a little bit lost at the moment. And I feel like I want to share because I want to be able to carry the message. And I feel like I haven't got a very strong message at the moment, but all I can do is be honest with myself. My son's here today and he loves being mentioned. And then he said, why don't you want to share, Mum? You normally do really good shares. And I said, because I feel insecure today. And I think it's been good to be honest to my son, because I used to hide in a room and drink and never wanted to show him my feelings, you know. And the insecurity that brought for me and for him is it's okay to feel. And he wanted me to share about that. I used to, I never wanted to leave the house, and if I did leave the house, it would be straight to the Bottle-O to go get a 4-pack of Woodstock 10%ers, you know. They taste horrible, but I could do a short amount of damage with a 10% 4-pack than, you know, wasting a couple of hours to get to that point. All I can do today is really just be honest with where I'm at. So at the moment, I have been struggling, and the reason why I've been struggling is because I haven't been doing my daily recovery plan. I don't ever want to forget where I've come from and how much I struggled and how broken I was. Today I'm not broken. I don't hate myself how I once hated myself, but I just like myself. And I can't wait until I love myself. But the change in me, I've got 19 months up, and the change in me... the change in me, the more comfy I get and the less anxiety I have, I can see that reflect on my children. And that's a really beautiful thing to see. You know, and I remember when I first started the program, I didn't believe in God and I didn't believe in a higher power, but I had nothing to lose, so I just did it, and I did it on a regular basis. And as I got about 3-4 months months up, I started to notice a change. You know, I surrendered, and I spent those 3-4 months fighting something and being in denial, and once I stopped being in denial and just surrendered, as in it all started making sense and my higher power started to work for me. So I'm grateful for that. I think you have to get to that point where you've got that desperation enough that you just want to change, and I just want to live. Some days I feel like I still am just surviving, but other days I really do want to live. And I don't know, I just, I'm grateful and I've got a lot more work to do, but I think at the moment the reason why I'm feeling lost is because I've been running on self-will, and I've got to be honest with myself. You know, it's not that, it's not, I put so much pressure on myself, like it's not that hard to do these steps, you know, and when I first started I wanted to do, you know, I was so eager and I wanted to start, but I've, you know, I've been running off self-will and trying to run my own race, and that's why I feel uncomfortable with myself at the moment, is because I have been running my own race. You know, I need to remove this running off self-will and just do what I need to do, because those times when I do what I need to do, I'm sane. I don't feel insane, you know. When I first walked into these rooms, I was extremely insane. And my moments of sanity come back to me when I'm not doing the suggested things and I'm not doing my program. So I know the difference from when I am running well and when I'm not running well, and it's just because I need to give myself a good kick up the bum sometimes and, you know, get back into what works for me and what I've seen has worked for everyone else. And yeah, AA is just a beautiful thing, and I'll just leave it there.
I just want to ask if there's any males that would like to share.
That haven't shared.
That haven't obviously shared over the weekend.
Have you shared?
No, I was just... Come on down.
Yeah. Joy of living. Joy of living. Yeah, hi, my name's Mark. I'm an alcoholic. I didn't realise I'd be standing up here. All right, thanks for asking me to share. And yeah, look, I've been in AA for about 7 years now, a bit over 7 years. And I had my last drink back on the 11th of February 2009. And a lot has changed in my life, to say the least. So, you know, I started drinking when I was 15 years of age. I'm from a lovely suburb in Sydney called Bankstown. And that's, I drank alcoholically from the start. And I drank alcoholically for 21 years from age 15 to age 36. And, there was a lot of alcohol that was actually drunk, actually, to be quiet, the whole time. I was a bender drinker from the start. Eventually, for the last few years of my drinking, I was probably drinking 20 to 30 drinks a day. And I was self-employed. I had enough money coming in each month. I could go to Dan Murphy's a few times a week, and I pretty much drank what I wanted to. I didn't realise that I'd isolated in my unit at Clayfield for the last sort of few years. And it wasn't until I got to an AA meeting that I realised I was an alcoholic, and I was 36 years of age. And I knew that I was on the way out. I knew that I wasn't going to make it. I just had this sick sort of sense deep within. And, you know, the big book, it describes me perfectly, the sort of person that I am. I have, I have the grave emotional and mental disorders. I've had them since I was a little kid. You know, and as a kid too, I had all sorts of, you know, OCD, touching, checking, counting, hoarding, constantly in fear, worry, anxiety, everything's not going to be okay. And that's how it was. And, you know, that was back in the 70s. It's not like you could really talk about it. Though it is a completely different ballgame these days. It's, you know, fortunately, in the second year of my recovery, I was a member at the men's meeting in Fortitude Valley. And the guys there, they said, look, pick someone from the home group to start getting taken through the big book and the steps. And I, at the time, I really sort of scoffed. I thought, as if this is going to help me. I felt better for the meetings. I was already worried. I thought a meeting's going to cut it for the rest of my life. And fortunately, I got taken through the big book in quite a structured way, doing the steps. And I had a few spiritual type experiences early on, which got me sold on the program. And I just kept going because I experienced the progressive nature of this illness. You know, I was drinking a lot of alcohol in the end, and you know, it wasn't working. I had a bouquet of the mental illnesses, and I was already being hospitalised in the end. So going back to alcohol wasn't really an option. And fortunately, I had that blind faith to keep going. And the group was my higher power in the early days. My first sponsor was, and some of the blokes and women. Yep. And it's just keep getting better and better. You know, in year three, there were some pretty good days. And, you know, I heard at a meeting too, you don't get your old life polished up. You actually get a brand new life. And I've had to put the action in. And actually, I thought at the start putting the action in was just not drinking. And then I thought putting the action in was just going to meetings, but it's, you know, it's what we learn in these rooms and actually applying it to outside. Which it's not easy. It's up here that, you know, our self-will that makes it quite difficult. It's, but I encourage, you know, if you identify as an alcoholic or a drug addict, it's, there definitely is a solution here. It's all in the big book. It's, yeah, it sort of revolutionised my life. And, you know, I've still had some issues go on. Family issues can be quite massive. You know, I come from a family of drinkers and they're all still drinking. But if you stick with this program and put yourself first, it's, you know, you need to put yourself first. And if things aren't adding up sometimes outside these rooms, we need to speak with people inside these rooms. And, because sometimes, you know, if another alcoholic can be the people that we need to get some good advice from. So thanks for asking me to share. I used to sort of, I wouldn't say cringe, but I used to hear some of these sort of sayings, but I can say these days I'm a grateful alcoholic. I know it's a continue, you know, we have a daily reprieve based on the maintenance of a spiritual condition. It's, it's just how it works. And, thanks for asking me to share.
We've got our last guest speaker, Mao from Darwin. Would you like to come up and share, please, mate?
Good afternoon, my name's Mel and I'm an alcoholic. Hey, a bit of anxiety going on here, a bit of nerves, and I know it's just the ego. And remember, I was in a meeting down in Sydney in the early days, I got up and said, I'm feeling a bit nervous. And one of the guys in the front row said, oh. So I went from nervous to resentment straight away. And, Hey. Yes, it's just the ego, and if I've actually shared all the things what I was asked about 2 weeks ago to now, because it'll take up a couple of hours, you know. But again, that's all the ego, all that stuff, wanting to impress and sound cool and spiritual and humble, you know. And and I was just thinking there, you know, today I don't know who I am, but I know who I'm not. Yeah? And who I'm not started off with other people's beliefs. You know, you're dumb, you're stupid, you're useless, you know. But then through my addiction, it reinforced those beliefs. I'm a loser. You know, you're going nowhere in life, you've got no friends. But again, that's all the ego. Yeah, so there's two sides. You know, one side it tells me, you know, you're useless, no good, bad, rah 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 rah. So the flip side of the ego is trying to put across its image, you know, look cool, you know, look shit together, I'm going places. And what this program has taught me, you know. And I suppose it's connecting with the real self, the God self, whatever, right? The person I was born to be, yeah? And that's my ongoing journey, you know. Yeah? And basically, I suppose, it's just learn to be loved, caring, you know, empathy, giving. Yeah? The opposite of the way I live. Yeah? And for me, to be able to do that is to be able to acknowledge the ego, you know, when it kicks in there. And like Bill W. talks about that, ego deflation at depth. Yeah? Yeah? Unfortunately, it can't be destroyed, but it's, you know. And the more I acknowledge my ego, or the ego, because it's not really me, that's the false self. The more I'm able to acknowledge that, yeah, when it cooks and it kicks in, I'm cruising around my Harley, you know, trying to look cool, you know, I'm looking good, you know. And the good thing about the wraparound sunglasses, until I glance out the side of the eye, see when someone's checking you out, you know. I see someone else, then, oh, you're hooting, you up yourself, you know, show off, you know. That's good. You know, be able to acknowledge that, recognise it, because that's, and the more I share it, the more it deflates it. So all the ego do is humiliated me, you know? And through this program, it's about getting to your humility. Learn to love and accept yourself exactly as I am, you know? When your ego's there or whatever, you know, just be able to acknowledge it. And the more I'm able to do that, the freer I am, you know, to be me. Yeah, that love and acceptance of myself. Yeah? Yeah, without having to try and impress, look cool, sound humble, spiritual, whatever. Yeah? And free I am. And so it's through that, where that ego deflation, yeah? The more I can deflate the ego, the more I allow God to inflate. Yeah? And the more I am, yeah, in the moment, which is the only thing that's real. The only thing that exists is right here, right now. Yeah. You know, the thing that separates me, you know, I start projecting, you know, I'm up in Darwin 2 weeks ago thinking about all this wonderful, smart, intelligent, you know, and even down here, things are going to say, I'm going to share at the meeting, you know. So that's all that projecting, you know. And it doesn't happen so much today that when I sit down, I used to think, oh shit, I should have said this, I should have said that, you know. The more I'm able to do that, you know, acknowledge it, it's all that stuff, you know, all that stuff, you know, insecurities, fears, shame, guilt of the past, you know, and it starts projecting into the future, you know, and it takes me away from being right here, right now. That's where my God, my higher power, spirit of the universe is. And the more I can connect with that power, the more connected, you know, at peace, you know, serene, happy, joyous and free I feel within myself. And the more I'm in that moment, the more I'm connected with you. Yeah, it's all that stuff. Yeah. And defects, character, whatever you want to call them. Yeah. And like the seven deadly sins, they're all emotions. Yeah. They're all just emotions. Yeah. And it still talks about emotional sobriety. It's about growing up, connecting with, be able to identify. Yeah. Emotions aren't good or bad, right or wrong. To me, they're God-given indicators of what's going on in my life. Now I get a bit of fear coming up because, you know, it's indicating I'm starting to project, you know, into the future, you know, shame, going back in the past. And for me today, the time is just being able to acknowledge that. Like before, with me thinking, one of the cliches, you know, talk about, I don't hear spoken a lot about now is think. My problem is I'd have a thought and I'd react. Yeah? Instead of think. Think it through. Yeah? Acknowledge the thought, because what happens, I have a thought, then the emotion's attached to that, then there's either a response or a reaction. sometimes it's just like that, from the thought to the emotion. It's always the thought that triggers that emotion. Sometimes it's identifying the thought before the emotion kicks in. Sometimes the emotion kicks in, resentment, anger, jealousy, insecurity, whatever. Sometimes it's a matter of acknowledging that, and sometimes it starts to run away before I get onto it. I shared with Angie last night, and I was certainly disconnected from the moment last night. There's a bit of stuff happening up in there. This is the first time I've really felt some stuff up here, Northern Territory at the moment. I'm sure people heard about it in the news and that. And the reality is that brings up my old stuff around racism, you know, drug and alcohol abuse or whatever, you know. Then I start projecting, which I was doing with Angela last night, projecting the future, what's going to happen, it's all the schemes, cover up, all that stuff, you know. But through this morning, just when I was sit there and started acknowledging, I suppose, where I was at last night with that stuff, again, you know, started feeling angry, you know, resentful. You know. It's such a powerful thing, as I said, just being able to acknowledge it. Sometimes it's just a matter of acknowledging to yourself. Sometimes I need to share it with a friend or wait at a meeting, and it loses power. Yeah. Like that first step. Yeah. While I was denying it, trying to control it, fix it or whatever, you know, it just destroyed me. And then they wanted to take my life. Yeah. And it's through that acknowledging, yeah, thinking. Acknowledging, you know, I'm powerless, my life's unmanageable, that acceptance, it lost its power. Yeah. The thing that wanted to destroy me, and that's the same thing that applies to my feelings, emotions, thoughts going on today. You know? When I learned to just acknowledge it, instead of trying to force it, I was thinking, oh shit, I'm saying that you say, I should be thinking this way, or I should be on the program, I should be doing this. It's bullshit. This is where I'm at right here, right now. So for me, just learn to acknowledge that. And when I do that, it loses power. It learns to bring me back right here, right now. And that's when I'm in joy. So I think on Facebook, you know, about, you know, you say, I enjoy your day, and some said, enjoy. And to me, that's learning to be in it, yeah, you know, feeling it, experiencing it. You know, I just feel so grateful, you know, that AA not only saved my life, but it's given me a life I never dreamed possible. You know. And last night as well, you know, about to get up, I love dancing. Mm-hmm. I love dancing. I do it up in Darwin, do rock and roll and swing dancing, you know. And seeing the people get out and doing it last night, you know, one of the miracles of recovery. Mm-hmm. I remember the first time I ever tried it, a few months later, you know, self-conscious, self-centered. You know, and they were looking at me and they're laughing at me, you know, the way I'm dancing. And a mate of mine there, he'd been a couple of years over, and sometimes he'd just out dance by himself, let himself go, you know. And I pull him aside, so I felt a bit self-conscious, you know, worrying about people looking at me or whatever. He said, you don't want to worry about that, brother. He said, they're too busy worrying about them, worry about what you're doing, you know. And that's the truth in life. Yeah. It doesn't just apply to us, because we're not unique. I try not to speak for others, you know, it's a typical alcoholic thinking. Typical human being thinking. People out there have fears, thoughts, insecurities, ego, whatever. The only major difference between me and them, if I don't deal with this stuff, it's going to kill me, you know? And I just feel so blessed and I'm grateful and glad I'm an alcoholic. Because it's given me some programs, given me my God, it's given me people. Thanks for the opportunity to share.
Well, thank you very much to all our speakers today, all those who shared. Thanks, Megs, for chairing this meeting with me. Announcements. We've got lunch coming up now. So we've got soup and bread roll for $5. We've got drinks also. The next meeting here will be 1:30. It's the long timers meeting. and it'll be followed by the sobriety countdown and the farewell. I don't... Oh, yep. Hang on. And there's a raffle for a second edition big book and a first Australian edition big book. The tickets are $2 each. It's for the Gold Coast Central Service Office. So they're out the front of the literature table selling tickets. And it'll be drawn on the 29th of October, and the winner will be notified by phone. And also, if you'd like to give the Aussie Park Committee some feedback, we'd really value that. There's a form at the literature table if you'd like to take some time, and if there's anything you feel like we could improve on or tell us how good we've been, please feel free. all right. But, yeah. Well, we'll finish this meeting now with a serenity prayer if you'd like to join hands.
To a God of your own understanding, God,
grant me the strength to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference even when I have the responsibility.
Well done, mate.